If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fought deals. Swing a line drive to left center field deep. Carroll racing back on it toward the warning track. It's got a chance, and it's going to go. It is gone. Into the Brewhouse red seats, a two-run opposite field home run for Jesse Winker, and the Nationals take the lead here in the sixth inning, 2-1.
Dave Jagler on the call yesterday with Charlie Slows on 106.7. The Fan, our sister station. The Nats get the win over Arizona, 3-1. Patrick Corbin, by the way, pitched five innings and only gave up one earned run and only three hits. He did walk a run in, but had seven strikeouts in another good starting pitching performance for this team, just coming from the most unlikely of starting pitchers. But they needed that one yesterday after generating no offense the night before. The Nats back to within a game of 500. But listen to this. Right now, 73 games in, they're eight short of the halfway mark of this season. The Nationals are tied with St. Louis for the second wild card position. There are three wild cards in each league. Atlanta right now is the number one wild card in the National League. And then it's Washington and St. Louis tied for the second and third spots. But there are six teams within a game, seven teams within a game and a half. It is cluttered in the National League. It's actually going to make for, you know, we had Dave Jagler on the show the other day, Denton, and Dave said there's going to be some flushing out of this. You're not going to end up with, you know, basically 9 to 10 teams in the hunt for two wild card spots when we get to September. But even if it's like four or five teams for two spots, that'll be exciting. There will be some big games, some scoreboard watching, and right now, that's all you want if you're a Nationals fan. You want to get to, you know, August and September and be in the mix of the teams that have a chance. And we'll see what they do towards the end of July. You know, most people don't think that they will be buyers, that Mike Rizzo will be responsible. There's a long-term plan in place, and it's not to go out and spend on a big bat in 2024 at the trade deadline. But would they be sellers if they are in contention for a wild card spot? Let's not forget that the team they're playing right now, Arizona, barely squeaked in last year and ended up in the World Series. So we'll see. It would be fun, you know, for, I don't know, the better part of 10 years when it's come to the football season. All I've asked for is just to be in the mix at Thanksgiving. It would be fun to see the Nats get to September 1st and actually be in the mix for a wild card spot in the National League. Look, they have two bats in the minor leagues, James Wood, Dylan Cruz. Cruz had a home run in his first AAA game yesterday. So they do have, you know, those guys lurking in terms of a potential bat or two. So there are some moves that can be made. But right now the Nats at 36-37, they finish up their set today with Arizona at 105 out at the ballpark in Navy Yard, and it's Mackenzie Gore pitching for Washington with a chance to get to 500 on the season. Remember, they did get to 20-20 in early May. And they haven't really flirted with 500 since then. So a win today would put them at 500 going into a weekend series out west against Colorado. The Rockies actually lost a wild game the other night. I don't know if anybody saw the highlights of their game against the Dodgers. There was a missed third strike call on a check swing. And then the next pitch was out of there for the Dodgers, and they roared back from like seven runs down to win 11-9. But the Rockies are not very good. They're 26-48. They're one of the worst teams in the bigs, and Washington will get a swing at them over the weekend. Good morning. We had the day off yesterday, and I think many of you did as well. We did not discuss Willie Mays' passing because we weren't on yesterday. I would urge everybody to read Tommy's column in the Washington Times. Just go to Tom's Twitter account, at Tom Lavero. Tommy is, you know, a Hall of Fame baseball voter. He certainly remembers Willie Mays' career, and he wrote very eloquently and interestingly about Willie Mays. But I have a couple of thoughts that I will share with everybody as well. We've had, in the last month, Bill Walton, Jerry West, Willie Mays. And of the three, Willie Mays is the greatest of the three relative to his standing in his sport. You know, most people have Willie Mays as the number two player of all time behind Babe Ruth on those various lists. By the way, speaking of lists, I'm going to get to this Pete Prisco list, which I did on my podcast yesterday, but I want to get to it with Denton today. We will see, you know, multiple top 100 player lists. And the one that I actually am most interested in is what the players themselves think of their contemporaries, and you get that list on NFL Network towards, I don't know, it starts right around training camp. Don't they do the countdown right around training camp, Denton, typically? And it lasts through the first 2 weeks of August as they count down, you know, 10 at a time from 100 down to 1. But Pete Prisco has been doing this for a long time at CBS Sports, and he came out with his list yesterday. So we will get to that. Two guests on the show today. Joining us at 11 a.m. is Nate Davis from USA Today. He graded everybody's off seasons now that, you know, mini camp and OTAs are done. So we'll get him to weigh in on Washington's off season. And then Adam Finkelstein from 247 Sports, 24/7 Sports, will join us at noon to talk NBA draft, which is a week from tonight. Did you know, Denton, they're spreading the NBA draft over two nights? There's two rounds to the NBA draft. And for the first time, they are going to televise the draft on two separate nights. The first round is a week from last night. It's Wednesday night, June 26th. So you'll get the first round on Wednesday night of next week, and then you'll get the second round on June 27th next week, which, by the way, is also the night of the first Trump-Biden debate. I think that'll do pretty well in the ratings compared to the NBA televising the second round of their draft. But they're spreading it out over two nights next week. ESPN's got both. I think the NBA draft, all due respect to it, is not going to get much of an audience for the second round of their draft. It's not night two of the NFL draft or even day three of the NFL draft. Look, the first round is basically, you know, two-thirds of those players will never amount to anything. All right. So, I wanted to just quickly mention the Willie Mays passing as in a little bit more detail, because I was into one of those deep dives yesterday upon his passing. I was reading everything about him. I was watching a lot of the discussion about him. Tim Kirchin's so good on this stuff. And we'll reach out to Tim soon. He's been incredibly busy, obviously, with the Willie Mays passing. And Tim, I think, is one of the really good historians. He had, when he put his list of the greatest Major League Baseball players of all time together, and he did his list a few years ago, he had Ruth 1, Mays 2. And that seems to be kind of where the list is overall. Willie Mays... is considered to be the original and one of the greatest five-tool players of all time. I did not see Willie Mays play. I don't remember Willie Mays playing even at the end of his career in New York with the Mets. Willie Mays with the Giants in the early 50s was part of a conversation that New Yorkers had, and Tommy's told me about this, and Tommy wrote about this, but Duke Snider, who was the center fielder with the Dodgers, Mickey Mantle with the Yankees, and then Willie Mays with the Giants, when you had all three teams in New York, the Giants, Dodgers, and Yankees, and you had the three best center fielders in the game all in one city, and it was just an incredible ongoing debate as to which one was the best. Of course, the Giants and the Dodgers would move later on in that decade out west. But Mays is pretty much, you're going to find him, you know, on the list of greatest players somewhere around 1 to 3. Hank Aaron's in the conversation. Most have Babe Ruth number one overall. Tommy wrote that Josh Gibson, now that the Negro League statistics have been integrated into the Major League Baseball statistics, that Gibson should be in consideration for the greatest player of all time. But the thing that I learned that I had no idea about, because Willie Mays, again, I didn't see him play. It's kind of like Jim Brown, the conversation about Jim Brown, or the conversations about Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, you know, during those eras. I mean, for some of you, you remember this. For me, I don't remember even the final few years when he was in his early 40s and he got traded to the Mets. But the thing that I didn't know is that he had a Korean War service commitment, which cost him essentially 2 seasons. And those 2 seasons, which were most of 1952 and the entirety of 1953, with his military service during the Korean War, he would have, more likely than not, hit enough home runs to where he would have been the one that would have broken Babe Ruth's record. One of my first baseball memories is Hank Aaron in 1974 breaking Babe Ruth's record. I mean, that was, you know, televised live nationally on a weeknight in April, you know, and the whole world was watching. Certainly the whole country was watching as Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's 714 mark. But Willie Mays, when he came back after the military commitment during the Korean War, in 1954, his first year back, he hit 41 home runs. He hit 51 home runs in 1955. He finished with 660. Ruth was at 714. So he's 54 home runs short of Babe Ruth's record. It's more than likely that the 2 years that he missed, he would have hit 54 home runs in aggregate, and he would have been the one to have broken Babe Ruth's home run record, not Hank Aaron. He would have done it in like 1971 or 1972. Now, he was 40 years old in 1971. And in 1971, he hit 18 home runs in his last, you know, truly productive season. That particular year, by the way, that particular year in 1971, there's an outlying statistic for him that I found very interesting. He had the most walks drawn in the history of his career, and it wasn't even close. He was walked 112 times in 1971. The most he had been walked prior to that was 82 times in 1964. So 30 more walks he took in 1971 at 40 years old. He clearly became, I guess, a more patient hitter as he got older. But he hit 18 home runs that particular year, and that would have likely been the year had he played in 52 and 53, where he would have broken Babe Ruth's record. So it would have come, more likely, 3 years earlier. Now, Hank Aaron would have eventually broken Willie Mays' record, you know, shortly thereafter. You know, in 1974, he would have got, because Mays didn't have many home runs left in 1971. 71, he had 18, and then he hit 8 in 72. And then, actually, he hit 16 in 72, and then hit 6 home runs in 1973. So he didn't have many left. If he had broken Ruth's record in 71, if he had passed 714, he probably would have ended up with somewhere around 725, and Aaron would have broken that record eventually in 1974, you know, right around then, you know, probably just later in the season in 1974. But I thought that was interesting because Hank Aaron breaking Babe Ruth's record on April 8th, I think it was, 1974, 50 years ago this past April, is one of the seminal moments of the 20th century in sports. You know, a black man in the South becoming the home run, all-time home run leader. I mean, that's the way it was called in that particular game. And it was, it would have been Mays had he not had the commitment to Korea, which many players had. You know, many players that came before him had the commitment, obviously, to World War II. But Mays, you know, I got wrapped up into reading about him. He was a complicated figure in many ways. And something Tommy told me, and I read a little bit about, his relationship with Hank Aaron was kind of cool. It was not super close. They were competitors, clearly. But Mays could be a complicated guy, perhaps off the field. He's also, and I think probably most of you know this, he's also Barry Bonds' godfather. And never really, you know, said anything publicly that was critical of Barry Bonds during, you know, the cream and clear years. Was always very supportive of his godson. But an interesting player, and I mean, we've had a couple of these now over the last couple of weeks, you know, going back to Walton on Memorial Day, but Mays, you know, widely considered to be one of the two or three greatest players in the history of the sport. Tim Kirchen wrote beautifully about him, and so did Tom. I'd recommend both of those to read if you're into the Willie Mays discussion. Anyway, all right, when we come back, I want to get to this top 100 list that Pete Prisco put out the other day, tell you how many Washington players are on it, and a discussion specific to the wide receiver position. We'll do that when we come back. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show and the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. So I got this from DH23, who, by the way, rated the show 5 stars on Apple. If you listen to this show via the podcast of this radio show and you get a chance to rate us and review us, especially on Apple and Spotify, it would be much appreciated. It's very helpful. Giving us 5 stars if you see fit and writing a quick 1 to 2 sentence review on Apple really helps us out. A lot of you do listen to this radio show, the podcast of the radio show. So rate us, review us, follow us on Apple and Spotify. That's big for us as well. So DH23 gave us 5 stars and wrote to me yesterday. He said, I love this show. The idea that Brandon Ayuk is better than Terry McLaurin is a real stretch. Forget the numbers which lean in Terry's direction. Ayuk is on a team coached by the great Kyle Shanahan on offense with the best running back in the league, the second best tight end, and another receiver who is top 20. I agree with most of your takes, but Ayuk over Terry, I'm not buying. Appreciate that, DH23, and appreciate the 5-star rating and this review. I mean, you can write in your review anything, 1 to 2 sentences. Just write, you really like the show and you love Denton. You can put that into the show. Everybody loves Denton, by the way. All of my friends who listen to the show, they love Denton is a part of the show, which I do too. So, look, this is the conversation that Denton and I had on Tuesday, you know, about the Brandon Ayuk situation off of the conversation that he had with Jaden Daniels that Ayuk posted to TikTok. First of all, let me just say what I said the other day. I don't think they'll trade him. I don't think they should trade him. I think they should try to win the Super Bowl this year, and their best chance to win the Super Bowl is to keep their best players on their team, and he is one of their best players. If I were a 49ers fan, I would say to hell with a second-round pick or a second and a fourth or a second and a fifth. You know, let's keep him on the last year of his rookie deal, and let's go win the Super Bowl, and then we can worry about it next year. And if we have to, we'll franchise him. But if they were going to trade him, I would be into it majorly. A second and a fourth, paying him. You've got plenty of money. You could front load the deal so that, you know, most of his cap hit on his new deal happens in 2024, where you've got all of this cap space. And giving Jaden Daniels another weapon, a familiar weapon, pairing him with Terry and Jahan. Yeah, I want offensive line. Of course I do. I want offensive line too. But Brandon Ayuk would be their best receiver. In my view, I think he's a better route runner. I think he's actually an exceptional route runner. I think he is better after the catch, at least slightly. I think he's a better blocker. You know, I mentioned the other day that Ayuk averages 17.9 yards per catch, or did last year. That was number one in the league for players with at least 70 catches in 2023. So that means among the best receivers in the league, Ayuk averaged the most yards per catch. Terry's average was 12.7 yards per catch. That was one of the lowest among receivers with at least 70 catches. But, you know, I actually think Ayuk threatens the defense vertically slightly more than Terry does. But Terry is a really good receiver. Like, every time we have this conversation, and we've had it over the years, I feel like I have to emphasize to those of you who don't agree with me that Terry isn't elite, or Terry isn't way up there on the list, or Terry is no less than Brandon Ayuk, I have to emphasize that I think Terry is an excellent receiver, and also acknowledge clearly that if Terry had been in a situation different than the one he's been in his career, you know, a situation that included better quarterback play, better talent around him, better coaching, that perhaps the perception of Terry McLaurin would be what my perception of Brandon Ayuk is right now. You know, I acknowledge all of that. I think Terry's really, really good. Really good. But that leads me into the list that I found yesterday morning. Pete Prisco's top 100 players entering the 2024 season. He does this list every year. It'll be the first of, you know, three, four, five, a half dozen top 100 or top 50 player lists entering this season upcoming. And, you know, he's an NFL journalist. I wouldn't consider him to be a top-flight NFL analyst, but he's been a high-end NFL journalist for a long period of time, and this is one of the things he does. And it's very subjective, so take it for what it's worth. But this list, let me just start with this. You've seen the list, right, Denton?
Yes, I have, and I got it pulled up in front of me now.
Yeah. So on the list, there isn't one Washington Commander. By the way, why should there be, maybe? I'll make the case for somebody here in a moment, but it's like they were 4-13 last year. You know, Washington and Indianapolis were the only two teams in the league that didn't have a player in the top 100. The other 30 teams all had at least one. If you're wondering what the list looks like, of course, Patrick Mahomes is number one on the list. Myles Garrett's two. Trent Williams is three. So we have a former player on the list. We actually have Montez Sweat's on the list as well. Tyreek Hill's 4, T.J. Watt is 5. Josh Allen in Buffalo, the quarterback Josh Allen, is 6. He's the second quarterback on the list. Justin Jefferson is 7. Christian McCaffrey's 8. Micah Parsons, 9. Nick Bosa, 10. No Washington players on the list anywhere. No Terry, who was 68 on the list last year. No John Allen, no Daron Payne, no Frankie Louvu. And there's another player that I think deserves consideration that isn't on the list either. I will get to him momentarily. But I want to just, you know, this is, again, it's very subjective. It's one person's opinion. But I actually think it will be an opinion shared by a lot of NFL people, you know, in terms of receiver rankings and where Ayuk falls in, where Terry falls in. Because on this list, Brandon Ayuk is the 9th best receiver in the NFL per his subjective top 100 and the 45th best player in the NFL. Terry's not on the list. He's the 2nd receiver listed among honorable mention vote getters or, you know, honorees. T. Higgins is before him. By the way, T. Higgins, we haven't had the T. Higgins conversation. Like, who would you rather have, Higgins or Ayuk, if they were both available? I'd rather have Ayuk, by the way. Denton, Higgins or Ayuk?
Brandon Ayuk in a heartbeat.
Yeah. So McLaurin ends up being the 19th best receiver in the NFL, according to this list. By the way, Cooper Kupp came after Terry McLaurin. He's 20th on this list. You know, there are other receivers like Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins that are also in the honorable mention area after Terry. And the honorable mention area is a continuation of the list, you can tell, because nothing's alphabetical. Nothing's, you know, laid out in a way that isn't anything other than, you know, by his definition of merit. But I guess I'm using that list just to say, Brandon Ayuk on almost anybody's list of the best receivers in the NFL is going to be ahead of Terry McLaurin. Doesn't mean that they're right. I'm just, for the purposes of responding to, you know, my guy DH23 and others that had a real problem and tend to have a real problem anytime we have this wide receiver conversation and I don't have Terry easily in the top 10, which I don't. You know, I don't think most of the rest of the people that cover the league would have Terry, but they acknowledge the same things. He's really good, and he unfortunately hasn't been in a good situation. He's had terrible quarterbacks, and he's had bad offensive coordinators. Certainly last year was not the best year of offensive coordinating in the history of the franchise. And I think everybody understands guys like Terry McLaurin, you know, there are other guys, you know, over the years. If they had been in better situations, they probably would be thought of differently. Again, I think Ayuk's a better route runner. I think he threatens the defense a little bit more than Terry does vertically. I think he's slightly better after the catch. I think he's probably a better blocker. I think he's just a better player, but not by a lot. But Brandon Ayuk's number 9 on this wide receiver list. By the way, there were 17 wide receivers in Pete Prisco's top 100. 17. Hill was 1. Jefferson was 2 in the wide receiver countdown. Jamar Chase was 3. CeeDee Lamb's 4. That's too high for me. Devontae Adams was 5. A.J. Brown was 6. Amon-Ra St. Brown was 7. Jalen Waddle was 8. Brandon Ayuk was 9. And Puka Nacua was 10. He had George Pickens at 11, Garrett Wilson at 12, Nico Collins, who's moved up on this list of the best wide receivers in the game after his year last year, was 13, Deebo was 14, Devontae Smith was 15, DJ Moore 16, Mike Evans 17. And then in the order of receivers on his honorable mention list, T. Higgins was 18, and then Terry was 19.
George Pickens ain't better than Terry McLaurin.
I don't think George Pickens is better than Terry either.
That's the thing. To be honest with you, this list.
I'm not so sure Devontae Smith is better than Terry.
I don't think Devontae Smith is certifiably better than Terry. I don't think Nico Collins is certifiably better than Terry.
He's coming, though.
Terry has an ability that very few wide receivers have. We've seen this before. He does have the ability to take over a game, whereas a lot of these guys do not. Because he was the only good player on the offense for years, and he was helping them win games when everyone in the arena in Indianapolis and Green Bay, those are the two that come to mind from 2 years ago, everyone in the arena knew he was getting the football, and they couldn't stop him.
You're getting a little bit hyperbolic here. Name a game that Terry took over.
You don't think the Colts game? You don't think 2 years
Colts
ago
the game Colts where he made that catch at the 1 yard line?
The Colts and the Packers, where Taylor Heinicke was only throwing to Terry moving down the field. That was the only option.
Terry had the catch on third down against the Packers.
Yeah,
is that taking over a game?
I thought it was because you knew he was getting the ball thrown to him. The defensive coordinator knew he was getting the ball thrown to him. The defense knew he was getting the ball thrown to him, and he still was able to make the catch.
I'm looking at what Terry's stats were in the games that just came to mind. 5 catches, 73 yards in that game against the Packers. It was a huge third down catch. By the way, a really trustworthy, good throw by Taylor Heinicke. The prayer in the Indianapolis game at the end was a great play by Terry McLaurin. He had 6 catches, 113 yards in that game. I wouldn't say that Terry McLaurin is a take the game over kind of a wide receiver. You know who could be? Nico Collins could be. I don't have as much of an issue with Nico Collins on this list ahead of him right now because I think he's just climbing. I think next year at this time, if C.J. Stroud, doesn't have a sophomore slump, I think Nico Collins will be even higher. I think Devontae Smith, I think George Pickens, I think, Waddle's speed I get, but I think he's too high on this list. Mike Evans actually can take over a game. He's a guy that when I think of a receiver who can take over a game, Evans has been a guy that's been able to do that. A.J. Brown's been a guy that's been able to do that. All of the elite guys obviously have done that before.
DJ Moore did.
But I would have Terry higher than 19th. I would have him higher right now than Devontae Smith, Pickens. Would I take Garrett Wilson in front of Terry McLaurin right now? I think I would because I know what he could be with good quarterback play, and I think it's more dynamic. I think Terry's right around the top 15-ish right now. Top 15, top 16-ish. Now, real quickly, on the rest of this list, so there are no Washington players on the list. The defensive tackles list included John Allen in the honorable mention area, like Terry, so that they were the only two players even listed in honorable mention. Again, I get it. Subjective list, Pete Prisco, etc. But Allen ended up being the 12th best defensive tackle in the league. There are some names, too, that are new names, like McNeil in Detroit, like Turner in L.A. Barmore we've known about for a while in New England, and he's climbed that list. But Chris Jones, Dexter Lawrence, Quinnen Williams, Matabuke, Derek Brown has been one of my favorites for a while. Jeffrey Simmons is too low on this list. He's the 10th best defensive tackle, 95th best overall player in the league. And I don't know, is Jalen Carter, is he a top 10 defensive tackle right now? I mean, I think he's had top 3 moments in games where you're like, kind of like Duron at various times over the last few years where you're like, oh my God, this guy at his best is dominant, but he hasn't been consistent enough, right?
No, especially as a rookie. I would take Jeffrey Simmons over Jalen Carter in a heartbeat.
Me too. Simmons is an absolute wrecker. So there's a player that you absolutely could make the case is a top 100 player. And if he's not a top 100 player, he should be considered to be top 6'7" at his position. And this list did not reflect that. And my guy Jason emailed me and shared this as a reminder to me, because I did not mention it when I discussed this yesterday on my podcast. We will get to who that player is when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Major League Baseball: Nationals beat the Diamondbacks on Wednesday by a score of 3-1. Jesse Winker hit the go-ahead two-run homer in the sixth inning. Patrick Corbin pitched five innings, struck out seven, and allowed just one run on three hits. Sad news in Major League Baseball: Willie Mays passes away at the age of 93. In the NHL, Caps trade Darcy Kemper to the Kings for Pierre-Luc Dubois. He's going to join the offensive side for the Caps. Mystics in the WNBA fall to the Indiana Fever, 88-81. Ariel Atkins had 27 points for the Mystics. Caitlin Clark had 18 points, 12 rebounds, and 6 assists for the Fever. And that's what's trending.
So this from my guy Jason. Kevin, I'm okay with your Pete Prisco list conversation when it comes to Aiyuk and Terry, but how didn't Sam Cosmi make the list? Yeah, that's a good one. And not only that, he wasn't even close to making the list. The list that we're referring to is this Pete Prisco Top 100 list. It's very subjective. I get it. It's June 20th. Come on, we got to talk NFL somehow. And people will have lists that will be coming out, and they may be far different than Pete Prisco's. We'll see. But on the list of the top 100 players on Pete Prisco's list on CBSSports.com, there were four guards: Chris Lindstrom, Atlanta; Joe Thuney, KC; Trey Smith, KC; Zach Martin, Dallas. And then in his honorable mention, he had six additional guards. So 10 guards on his top 100 and honorable mention, and Sam Cosmi wasn't one of them. I think, Jason, you're right. In fact, I think of the Washington players on their current roster, Sam Cosmi is the best argument, taking Tress way out of the conversation because there were no kickers or punters. By the way, I don't think Tressway would be a top 100 player. I don't even know where he would be on the top punter list. It's not top two or three. It might be top five, top six, top seven, something like that. He actually had an off year last year. He was banged up. He was injured last year. But Sam Cosmi's the guy on the team right now that you could make the case is high up in the rankings of players at his position. He finished fifth overall in the 2023 campaign per PFF at guard. He was first over the final seven games of the season. He had an 80 grade overall, the highest grade of any player on Washington's team. And PFF, in their look ahead to 2024, ranked the top 32 guards in the NFL. Sam Cosmi was number three. Lindstrom was one, Thuney was two, Cosmi was three. They write, Cosmi was quietly one of the best guards in the NFL in 2023. His 80.6 PFF overall grade ranked fifth at the position, and he had seven games with an overall grade of 80 or higher. Despite that, Cosmi didn't garner the attention he deserved in his first full season as a starter. He spent most of the first two NFL seasons, as we know, at right tackle before making the switch inside to guard in 2023. His 4.3% pressure rate allowed last year was the 19th lowest at the position. But they have him as the number three guard entering the 2024 season. Again, it's PFF. Take it for what it's worth. But I think the opinion from those who really pay attention to a position that doesn't get a lot of attention, and maybe Pete Prisco is just throwing together a list of some names at the position, although he pulled a couple out that aren't necessarily household. But he's not in the top 10 guards? Yeah, Sam Cosmi should have been, worst case, honorable mention on that list. But I'm not worked up over it. I'll tell you one thing. You know what is interesting, Denton, is that Quentin Nelson wasn't, you know, in the top 100. Quentin Nelson, during his first 2 to 3 years in his career in Indianapolis, what would that have been, 2017, 18, 19? Wasn't he the John Allen draft?
Yes, I believe so.
He was thought to be not only the best guard in the NFL, but one of the best guards that had come around in the league in a long, long time. And here it is. He was first team All-Pro from 2018 through 2020. All right? And then he got injured in 2021, and he hasn't been the same player since. He was ranked as the 15th best guard in the league last year. That was actually better than what it was in 22 and 21 after he got hurt in 21. But God, there was a conversation about Quentin Nelson for a while, that this guy actually has the makings of a guy that could be an all-time Hall of Fame guard. There were people in 2019, 2020 that thought Quentin Nelson might be the best all-around football player in the NFL. I remember some of those conversations. I'm like, hold on. We're talking about a guard here. He is the projected 11th best guard in the NFL heading into the 2024 season per PFF. So do you agree with me that Sam Cosmi's probably the only player on the roster that you could legitimately have a problem with him not being in the top 100?
Yeah, definitely. On top of that, I mean, it's like an overall problem. There's only four guards on this entire list, and none of them are in the honorable mentions. I mean, come on, Pete. We got to give some love to the big boys up front.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the perception is the tackle position is just much more important. Even the center position is much more important. I would say that in today's NFL, your interior linemen are more important than they've ever been because of the incredible, you know, growth of the interior defensive lineman position. We saw all of them get paid, not this year, but the last couple of years. And there are some incredible, impactful, you know, Aaron Donald's gone. He retired, so there's no more Aaron Donald to deal with. But, you know, we've listed all of them, you know, Quinnen Williams, Jeffrey Simmons, you know, Dexter Lawrence, Chris Jones, obviously, especially in the postseason. The position doesn't get as much love. But in looking at the roster, like several of you sent me, well, what about Luvu or Wagner? I don't know about top 100. I have hope that Luvu could become that. You know, could become a top 100 kind of player, could become one of the better linebackers in the league. Feel that way about Jeremy Chinn to a certain degree as well. I mean, Bobby Wagner is, you know, he's in the twilight of his career. You know, maybe this time next year, Jaden Daniels will be on top 100 lists. But Cosmi's the guy. Look, there's a part of all of these NFL discussions this time of year, when it comes to list making and rankings, etc., where the past does creep into the minds of people doing this. You know, you don't think of Washington when you're putting together a list of something great. You know, there's just not there's no belief yet. They're going to have to prove that. They're going to have to earn that. You know, if Montez Sweat were still in a Washington uniform, I don't know that he would be on Pete Prisco's top 100 list. I think he came in the 70s, somewhere in the 70s. I don't have it in front of me now. I did. Sweat was on the list. Did you see where he came in?
Yeah, I'm scrolling now. I had him up here.
73.
73. Yeah.
He came in at 73. Last year in Washington, he was not on this list. Now, he had his best season in terms of aggregate sack totals, had, you know, 7.5, I think it was, when he got to Chicago. Last year on the list were John Allen and Terry McLaurin. But yeah, I think there is some of that still. I think in any of these conversations, the, you know, the outside the market people aren't ready to, you know, consider Washington. Washington's not top of mind when you're talking about great or good when it comes to NFL rosters or players or any of that stuff. They're going to have to earn that. And, you know, they could take a big step in that direction this year. There was another story yesterday, real quickly, football team related, that I wanted to talk about. And we'll get to Nate Davis at 11 a.m. from USA Today. He actually considered Washington in a positive sense, and he'll tell you how and why in about 10 minutes. But I saw this story yesterday from Front Office Sports, A.J. Perez, who's written a lot about the team over the last few years, investigations, etc. But he wrote a story yesterday for Front Office Sports. Negotiations over Native American imagery is stalling the Senate RFK Stadium bill. And he wrote, the RFK Stadium bill that passed the House remains stuck in the Senate and is unlikely to move until after Thanksgiving. Why? Senator Steve Daines from Montana has single-handedly halted the bill over the Commanders logo from their R days, their Redskin days. So this is, there's something that has happened here over the last 4+ months that cannot be debated. And that is that we went from the RFK site bill passing in the House with the thought that it would be a slam dunk and it would happen fairly quickly in the Senate, to having multiple obstacles now towards this bill getting through the Senate. Understand, if it does not pass in the Senate, unless they attach it to some other bill, which they tried to do and didn't get done previously, if they don't pass this bill, the city can't do a deal with the team for the RFK site because they don't have control over the land. This bill will give the city control for the next 99 years with an extended and an amended lease so that they can then go to the team and negotiate a deal to bring the team back to D.C. But it has to get through the Senate. The only other way is for it to be attached to another bill, but so far those attempts have failed. Now, here's the interesting thing about this Steve Daines thing. The people that I've talked to mostly believe that Daines and the Wetzel family, the creators of the logo, Walter Blackie Wetzel, back in 1972, per George Allen's request, he's the one that developed the logo that we had for all of those years, nearly 50 years. The thought from team people and people in general is that they'll figure something out to make them, you know, feel like the logo's being properly honored. The real obstacle, according to Tommy, who was the first to report this, but I've heard from people since that have said, your boy Lavero is spot on with this one. Tommy reported 2 weeks ago, and we had him on the show, remember, after he reported this, that Chris Van Hollen, the senator from Maryland, is actually the most concerning of obstacles to getting the RFK site bill through the Senate. Chris Van Hollen, if he were to vote for the bill, would be voting theoretically against his state's best interests, which are to keep the team in Landover. That's what Governor Wes Moore wants. That's what Chris Van Hollen wants. I think, ironically, that most Maryland residents who are fans of the team would actually prefer the stadium to be in D.C. as well. But that aside, the concern that Tommy wrote about, more than any other, not Steve Daines, not the Wetzels, not the logo situation, is Chris Van Hollen. And you're talking about basically 4 months ago, end of February, passes in the House, and it seemed like a mere formality at that point. It was going to be easy, slam dunk. No one was reporting at that point, oh, wait a minute, hold on, that was the easy part. The Senate's going to be the tough part. No one was reporting that. I don't think they were. I don't remember it being reported that way. It was almost a foregone conclusion that it would pass in the Senate, and then the city would have the new amended extended lease to then go to the team and negotiate a deal to bring the team back to RFK. And instead, we have, at the very least, two obstacles. And the idea that this is unlikely to move until after Thanksgiving, according to Front Office Sports, is another obstacle, and that's timeline. I think the team was hopeful that this would get through the Senate quickly. They could negotiate a deal that was favorable to both city and team, and before the 2024 season opener at Tampa Bay, they could announce with great fanfare, we're coming home. And now it looks like there's not going to be any announcement if Front Office Sports is accurate and that Steve Daines isn't going to move until after Thanksgiving. Look, they have, I think, another week, and then they're some months off, then they come back shortly after September. But remember, it's an election year. You know, so they're going to be focused on their own elections in November, which is why, you know, if they don't get it done in like the next week or two, it's basically until Thanksgiving. They don't want this stadium to open in 2033. They want it to open in 2029 or 2030. They got to get this thing rolling. At some point, they're going to run out of patience with Congress. More obstacles than we ever thought when this thing skated through the House and passed in the House. You know, I still believe that it'll end up in D.C., but a lot less convinced than I was at the end of February. Nate Davis, USA Today. We'll talk some NFL. We'll talk some Commanders with him next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So this from my guy Jason. Kevin, I'm okay with your Pete Prisco list conversation when it comes to Aiyuk and Terry, but how didn't Sam Cosmi make the list? Yeah, that's a good one. And not only that, he wasn't even close to making the list. The list that we're referring to is this Pete Prisco Top 100 list. It's very subjective. I get it. It's June 20th. Come on, we got to talk NFL somehow. And people will have lists that will be coming out, and they may be far different than Pete Prisco's. We'll see. But on the list of the top 100 players on Pete Prisco's list on CBSSports.com, there were four guards: Chris Lindstrom, Atlanta; Joe Thuney, KC; Trey Smith, KC; Zach Martin, Dallas. And then in his honorable mention, he had six additional guards. So 10 guards on his top 100 and honorable mention, and Sam Cosmi wasn't one of them. I think, Jason, you're right. In fact, I think of the Washington players on their current roster, Sam Cosmi is the best argument, taking Tress way out of the conversation because there were no kickers or punters. By the way, I don't think Tressway would be a top 100 player. I don't even know where he would be on the top punter list. It's not top two or three. It might be top five, top six, top seven, something like that. He actually had an off year last year. He was banged up. He was injured last year. But Sam Cosmi's the guy on the team right now that you could make the case is high up in the rankings of players at his position. He finished fifth overall in the 2023 campaign per PFF at guard. He was first over the final seven games of the season. He had an 80 grade overall, the highest grade of any player on Washington's team. And PFF, in their look ahead to 2024, ranked the top 32 guards in the NFL. Sam Cosmi was number three. Lindstrom was one. Thuny was two. Cosmi was three. They write, Cosmi was quietly one of the best guards in the NFL in 2023. His 80.6 PFF overall grade ranked fifth at the position, and he had seven games with an overall grade of 80 or higher. Despite that, Cosmi didn't garner the attention he deserved in his first full season as a starter. He spent most of the first two NFL seasons, as we know, at right tackle before making the switch inside to guard in 2023. His 4.3% pressure rate allowed last year was the 19th lowest at the position. But they have him as the number three guard entering the 2024 season. Again, it's PFF. Take it for what it's worth. But I think the opinion from those who really pay attention to a position that doesn't get a lot of attention, and maybe Pete Prisco is just throwing together a list of some names at the position, although he pulled a couple out that aren't necessarily household. But he's not in the top 10 guards. Yeah, Sam Cosmi should have been, worst case, honorable mention on that list. But I'm not worked up over it. I'll tell you one thing. You know what is interesting, Denton, is that Quentin Nelson wasn't, you know, in the top 100. Quentin Nelson, during his first 2 to 3 years in his career in Indianapolis, what would that have been, 2017, 18, 19? Wasn't he the John Allen draft?
Yes, I believe so.
He was thought to be not only the best guard in the NFL, but one of the best guards that had come around in the league in a long, long time. And here it is. He was first team all pro from 2018 through 2020. All right. And then he got injured in 2021, and he hasn't been the same player since. He was ranked as the 15th best guard in the league last year. That was actually better than what it was in 22 and 21 after he got hurt in 21. But God, there was a conversation about Quentin Nelson for a while, that this guy actually has the makings of a guy that could be an all-time Hall of Fame guard. There were people in 2019, 2020, that thought Quentin Nelson might be the best all-around football player in the NFL. I remember some of those conversations. I'm like, hold on. We're talking about a guard here. He is the projected 11th best guard in the NFL heading into the 2024 season per PFF. So do you agree with me that Sam Cosmi is probably the only player on the roster that you could legitimately have a problem with him not being in the top 100?
Yeah, definitely. On top of that, I mean, it's like an overall problem. There's only four guards on this entire list, and none of them are in the honorable mentions. I mean, come on, Pete. We got to give some love to the big boys up front.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the perception is the tackle position is just much more important. Even the center position is much more important. I would say that in today's NFL, your interior linemen are more important than they've ever been because of the incredible, you know, growth of the interior defensive lineman position. We saw all of them get paid, not this year, but the last couple of years. And there are some incredible, impactful, you know, Aaron Donald's gone. He retired, so there's no more Aaron Donald to deal with. But, you know, we've listed all of them. You know, Quinnen Williams, Jeffrey Simmons, you know, Dexter Lawrence, Chris Jones, obviously, especially in the postseason. The position doesn't get as much love. But in looking at the roster, like several of you sent me, well, what about Luvu or Wagner? I don't know about top 100. I have hope that Luvu could become that. You know, could become a top 100 kind of player, could become one of the better linebackers in the league. Feel that way about Jeremy Chinn to a certain degree as well. I mean, Bobby Wagner's, you know, he's in the twilight of his career. You know, maybe this time next year, Jaden Daniels will be on top 100 lists. But Cosme's the guy. Look, there's a part of all of these NFL discussions this time of year when it comes to list making and rankings, etc., where the past does creep into the minds of people doing this. You know, you don't think of Washington when you're putting together a list of something great. You know, there's just not, there's no belief yet. They're going to have to prove that. They're going to have to earn that. You know, if Montez Sweat were still in a Washington uniform, I don't know that he would be on Pete Prisco's top 100 list. I think he came in the 70s, somewhere in the 70s. I don't have it in front of me now. I did. Sweat was on the list. Did you see where he came in?
Yeah, I'm scrolling now. I had him up here.
73.
73. Yeah.
He came in at 73. Last year in Washington, he was not on this list. Now, he had his best season in terms of aggregate sack totals, had, you know, 7.5, I think it was, when he got to Chicago. Last year on the list were John Allen and Terry McLaurin. I think there is some of that still. I think in any of these conversations, the outside the market people aren't ready to, you know, consider Washington. Washington's not top of mind when you're talking about great or good when it comes to NFL rosters or players or any of that stuff. They're going to have to earn that. And, you know, they could take a big step in that direction this year. There was another story yesterday, real quickly, football team related, that I wanted to talk about. And we'll get to Nate Davis at 11 a.m. from USA Today. He actually considered Washington in a positive sense, and he'll tell you how and why in about 10 minutes. But I saw this story yesterday from Front Office Sports, A.J. Perez, who's written a lot about the team over the last few years, investigations, etc. But he wrote a story yesterday for Front Office Sports. Negotiations over Native American imagery is stalling the Senate RFK Stadium bill. And he wrote, "The RFK Stadium bill that passed the House remains stuck in the Senate and is unlikely to move until after Thanksgiving. Why? Senator Steve Daines from Montana has single-handedly halted the bill over the Commanders logo from their R days, their Redskin days." There's something that has happened here over the last 4+ months that cannot be debated. And that is that we went from the RFK site bill passing in the House with the thought that it would be a slam dunk and it would happen fairly quickly in the Senate, to having multiple obstacles now towards this bill getting through the Senate. Understand, if it does not pass in the Senate, unless they attach it to some other bill, which they tried to do and didn't get done previously, if they don't pass this bill, the city can't do a deal with the team for the RFK site because they don't have control over the land. This bill will give the city control for the next 99 years with an extended and an amended lease, so that they can then go to the team and negotiate a deal to bring the team back to D.C. But it has to get through the Senate. The only other way is for it to be attached to another bill, but so far those attempts have failed. Now, here's the interesting thing about this Steve Daines thing. The people that I've talked to mostly believe that Daines and the Wetzel family, the creators of the logo, Walter Blackie Wetzel, back in 1972, per George Allen's request. He's the one that developed the logo that we had for all of those years, nearly 50 years. The thought from team people and people in general is that they'll figure something out to make them, you know, feel like the logo's being properly honored. The real obstacle, according to Tommy, who was the first to report this, but I've heard from people since that have said, your boy Lavero is spot on with this one. Tommy reported 2 weeks ago, and we had him on the show, remember, after he reported this, that Chris Van Hollen, the senator from Maryland, is actually the most concerning of obstacles to getting the RFK site bill through the Senate. Chris Van Hollen, if he were to vote for the bill, would be voting theoretically against his state's best interests, which are to keep the team in Landover. That's what Governor Wes Moore wants. That's what Chris Van Hollen wants. I think, ironically, that most Maryland residents who are fans of the team would actually prefer the stadium to be in D.C. as well. But that aside, the concern that Tommy wrote about, more than any other, not Steve Daines, not the Wetzels, not the logo situation, is Chris Van Hollen. And you're talking about basically 4 months ago, end of February, passes in the House, and it seemed like a mere formality at that point. It was going to be easy, slam dunk. No one was reporting at that point. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. That was the easy part. The Senate's going to be the tough part. No one was reporting that. I don't think they were. I don't remember it being reported that way. It was almost a foregone conclusion that it would pass in the Senate, and then the city would have the new amended extended lease to then go to the team and negotiate a deal to bring the team back to RFK. And instead, we have, at the very least, two obstacles. And the idea that this is unlikely to move until after Thanksgiving, according to Front Office Sports, is another obstacle, and that's timeline. I think the team was hopeful that this would get through the Senate quickly. They could negotiate a deal that was favorable to both city and team, and before the 2024 season opener at Tampa Bay, they could announce with great fanfare, we're coming home. And now it looks like there's not going to be any announcement if Front Office Sports is accurate and that Steve Daines isn't going to move until after Thanksgiving. Look, they have, I think, another week, and then they're some months off, then they come back shortly after September. But remember, it's an election year, you know, so they're going to be focused on their own elections in November, which is why, you know, if they don't get it done in like the next week or two, it's basically until Thanksgiving. They don't want this stadium to open in 2033. They want it to open in 2029 or 2030. They got to get this thing rolling. At some point, they're going to run out of patience with Congress. More obstacles than we ever thought when this thing skated through the House and passed in the House. You know, I still believe that it'll end up in D.C., but a lot less convinced than I was at the end of February. Nate Davis, USA Today. We'll talk some NFL. We'll talk some Commanders with him next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.